the global path to economic recovery remains rocky. Inflation is soaring across the West. In response, central banks are hiking rates, risking recession, and geopolitical tensions abound. How can businesses not only survive in the face of such unpredictability, but thrive? And is risk always such a bad thing? I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the So What from BCG.
If you are able to understand the early warning signals and prepare accordingly, when surprises happen, you'll be ready to accelerate. You'll be ready to jump into those situations more quickly than others, even in your same sector.
I'm talking again to Alan Eaney, Global Leader and Director of Creativity and Scenarios at BCG, and author of Thinking in New Boxes, a new paradigm for business creativity.
Last time we spoke, we talked about the uncertainty advantage. And what exactly is that? It's a good place to give a refresher. The idea of an uncertainty advantage is to be better prepared than others for whatever lies ahead. And if you have any hope of managing that, you have to start with the humility to admit that you cannot precisely predict what lies ahead. And frankly, one of the things that's really become more and more obvious in the last couple of years is that surprises will happen.
Well, indeed. You say they're better prepared than others, but you need to do it with humility that you're not going to know everything. How in this environment can you prepare for what's coming down the line for your business?
Step one is to go beyond the headlines and the pundits and have a little bit of, when I say humility, what I mean is acknowledging that you cannot precisely predict it. And it's not just you. You know, if somebody with a fancy title of chief economist of a country or a Fortune 500 company or whatever tells you that this thing is going to happen, okay, they might be right. In fact, they're probably right. 80, 90% they're right, but surprises will happen. And so no matter what you're reading, no matter what you're hearing, taking the time to take it with a grain of salt and think about what else might happen and try and de-average it in terms of what it actually means for your organization, for your business, that's a beautiful place to begin.
Let's be clear. I mean, sadly, even in the darkest times, there are always inevitable winners. You know, we've seen that through the pandemic, we've seen it in the global financial crisis. There's always companies that are naturally positioned. A bit of luck, that's just maybe their business. Let's focus on those that aren't naturally positioned to win in a situation like that. But can you pivot yourself? Can you adapt to be one of the, if not out and out winners, but you can at least have an advantage against your competitors?
Absolutely. And I think, frankly, it's true in any sector, because it's very easy for me to say, okay, well, in general, in recessionary times, some of the inelastic players like grocery and healthcare are relative winners. Okay. And in this current Russian crisis, which, you know, okay, we can say it's a humanitarian crisis and an ethical crisis and all the rest of it. But in the end, if you're an oil player, well, you're doing okay. But among oil players, then what? I mean, you're competing against other oil players. So good for you. You have a natural inbuilt advantage. But even within that sector, what does it take to have a relative advantage? What does it take to have an advantage over the other oil players? What does it take for a retailer to have an advantage over the other retailers? And indeed, in the sectors that are less inherently advantaged, what does it take to rethink these things? I think that the question really applies to everybody, not just the inherent winners and losers. What it takes is, you know, some of what we discussed last time is how can we understand the signals and facts better? How can we become more resilient by being prepared for a broader range of things? And these are the sorts of things we've been tackling now with a variety of players. When you think about the semiconductor shortage, yes, it's not only affecting the refrigerators, but also the automobile industry and the laptop industry and whatever else you want. And when you think about automakers, when there was this first shortage of chips, there were fundamentally different reactions to it. You know, the classic Detroit-style automakers would say, uh-oh, we have to slow down our production because we don't have enough chips. And okay, they have a few months' notice, fine. Yes, it's classic management, fine. What did Tesla do? Tesla actually re-engineered their cars so that they wouldn't need that particular type of chip and they could use this chip instead. But the classic automaker is not set up for that sort of thing. The ability to re-engineer, the ability to rethink the way you've been doing things is not just a cultural thing that one wants to instill on an ongoing basis, but it's something that pays off in this particular type of environment.
Let's focus a bit more on this type of environment. Central banks are trying to do what they can to bring inflation down. That includes raising interest rates. That includes slowing growth. And in that environment, as a business, you know, how does that create an advantage for you?
It's a very interesting thing because central banks and chief economists of big corporations and all the rest of it are now stating what should be done in terms of interest rates or what have you, based on what they have learned in the past. This is perfectly reasonable. We're human beings. We learn from the past. And yet there are plenty of ways in which this particular economic situation, which may or may not ultimately be called a recession, but there are plenty of ways in which this thing is different. I mean, who ever heard of a situation like this where there's high employment rates and I mean, low unemployment? This is not normal for a recession. The type of situation we're facing where there's an energy crisis at the same time as this, where there's still this lingering endemic COVID. I mean, this is unprecedented. This is not the same as every previous recession. I don't know enough to say whether that means they should or shouldn't raise rates and what that actually means. But what I am reading and what I am hearing is that if there is a recession, it'll likely be shorter than previous ones. If there is, it'll certainly have vastly different effects on employment and on wages than previous ones. So this is a different animal. And I think the more policymakers are able to acknowledge that and able to attach a dose of humility as well to their prescriptions, I think the better off we would all be.
We've spoken about central banks raising rates. That's an external area, a big one that as a business you need to be focusing on. What other areas should you be thinking about could impact on your business and take away that advantage?
Well, if I were a policymaker or if I were a CEO, I would take to heart the fact that more than half of the Fortune 500 was actually founded during recessionary times. And so there's actually reason to believe that difficult economic times breeds innovation, or necessity is the mother of invention. I mean, we've heard that all the time. And so what does that actually mean? It means that we should think about new sparks of ideas. We should think about empowering startups. We should think about incenting startups to experiment with new things. When we say new things and the next big thing, you know, it doesn't have to come from, you know, Zuckerberg in the dorm room or Hewlett-Packard in the prototypical garage, but it can come from the large organizations as well, if they are willing to adopt that kind of mindset, the mindset of challenging the status quo, doubting that the way we've always done things will be the way we should always do things. And that willingness to actually experiment is a beautiful thing, especially in uncertain times.
And a very risky thing.
I think so. You're right. It is a risky thing. But then when you take that word risk, you know, there's this thought experiment I do with clients sometimes. And I say, when I say the word risk, what words come to mind? And people say, oh, avoid, minimize, mitigate. Nobody often says take advantage or exploit. Yes, it's a risky move to make. And yes, sometimes it won't pay off. But thinking from a risk intelligent point of view, which risks do we want to mitigate, to be sure? Which risks do we want to just tolerate? And which risks do we want to exploit and take advantage of? I mean, this is a fundamentally different way of thinking than just this business of every risk is something to be minimized and avoided, and we have our compliance people and all the rest of it.
I mean, obviously, you don't want to go in gung-ho foolhardy, but how do you be risk intelligent? How can you make that a thing in your company?
I think this mindset we've been talking about in terms of acknowledging that surprises will happen, having the humility to admit that you can't predict things and hence you should be willing to challenge your way of doing things. I mean, all of that leads to, what I would call this kind of risk intelligent mindset, this organization that is willing to take risks under the right circumstances, if it's thoughtful, and acknowledging that a certain amount of them will lead to negative results, will fail and all the rest of it. Imagine the mindset in the old days of a pharmaceutical company that is investing in a whole pile of compounds and seeing where they'll go. And then in phase one trials, some of them fail. In phase two trials, some of them fail. In phase three trials, some of them fail. And so, okay. But the interesting bit then is that for the scientist who shepherded a particular compound for years of her career all the way through to phase three, and then it failed in trials. Okay, well, they're doing some other things as well. That's not a black mark on her career the way it would be for somebody who shepherded some idea for a few years in a bank or a retailer or almost any other industry. And if all of those other industries can mimic that kind of environment where thoughtful processes that sometimes lead to failure are accepted. I don't mean the kind of failure where your kid doesn't study for an exam and then flunks it. But if it's a failure that comes from a thoughtful process and as part of a portfolio of ideas, some of which will fail, I think that's wonderful.
So you think even in These are scary times, just looking at the front pages of the newspapers over the past couple of years. It is gloom and doom, and to talk about uncertainty advantage and intelligent risk taking, and it will run counter, I think, to a lot of companies that will just at this moment probably want to hunker down and reassess where they're at this moment. But you think that companies can turn this, even if it's not a natural, as we said at the start, not a natural win for a company in this environment, you think that they can turn it to their advantage?
Absolutely. And I think, look, it's also a question of when and how and under what circumstances. I mean, if you remember the early days of the COVID pandemic or the first few days after Putin decided to make his invasion, at those moments, of course, there is a fire drill. There's an urgent short-term thing. What should we do about our people? How can we set them up to work at home? How can we pull them out of Russia? How can we deal with whatever it is? All of the okay. So there are legitimate short-term things that need to be dealt with. I accept that, but not forever. And, you know, whether it's a few weeks in, a few months in, at some point to actually lift your head up from the short-term crisis and take the time to ponder the medium term, to think about what kinds of worlds might I have to operate in and how can I be better prepared than others for all of them. Which doesn't mean that we have to make a million bets just in case X, Y, and Z happens. It means making thoughtful, decisive moves and being willing to adapt them, being agile and nimble enough to adapt. But it means, you know, being ready to move ahead while others are flailing around and still stuck in the short term, or frankly, being ready to pause thoughtfully while others are rushing ahead without thinking. And so either way, it's that kind of decisive move or decisive pause based on better information and better risk intelligence and more thoughtfulness that can actually lead to this uncertainty advantage.
How do you get that better information? Where are you looking? Do you need different personnel? What is your company going to look like for you to be positioned in a way that can take advantage of the uncertainty advantage?
So for a company thinking about this, yeah, there are times when they can subscribe to more information, they can go deeper into this. But in the end, I think there's a limit to that. Let's say I'm a hospital system, I'm a healthcare system, thinking about the fact that my demand is relatively inelastic because people are always going to get sick and so on. But actually, if I look at the overall system, costs are going up in the healthcare system in every Western country, but outcomes are not really. People are not really living longer. And that clearly is not a sustainable thing. So we all have access to the same facts about aging population, rising healthcare spend, more testing and all of this. But in the end, it's also the humility to step back and think about how might I interpret those things in new ways? What if I challenge the mindset of, well, I'm in the healthcare business. What if I'm in the health business and that enables me to think about more prevention and more proactive care? And what if instead of thinking about hospitals, I think more about home care, again, in the preventive manner? Or instead of thinking only about quality of an individual test or intervention or care, I think about value and whether it's worth it. And these are the sorts of shifts in mindset that can be necessary in any industry, in any sector, taking the time to challenge your sacred cows, your deepest held assumptions and constraints about how business works is the best way to get better information, quite frankly.
When, Alan, would you be going into a company and asking them to take a look at the way that they do things, how they think about things, how they process that information and that data? Is it now when we're in these dark economic times, or is this something that you should have been looking at years before?
My instinctive answer is that it's always important, right? But that's easy for me to say as a consultant. And I can't expect a company, well, look, okay, every Monday morning we have a brand new strategy, you know, so that's unreasonable. And yet, it's only in fostering that kind of mindset on an ongoing basis that you'll be ready to challenge these sorts of things. Or if something comes along, whether pandemic or Ukraine or other sorts of shocks that may happen, cyber attacks, I don't know what, these things didn't necessarily create trends like working from home or home delivery or all of that stuff, but they drastically accelerated a lot of them. And so if you are able to understand the early warning signals and recognize those sorts of things and prepare accordingly, then when surprises happen, you'll be ready to accelerate. You'll be ready to jump into those situations more quickly than others, even in your same sector.
You mentioned they're working from home. Is that, we're getting different narratives, aren't we, about working from home? One is the work shy and we need to get back into the office. And the other is actually this is an opportunity. It's not the only change that's happened, you know, over the last couple of years. Are there other areas that actually that you could look at in two totally different ways? And if you could take advantage of it, it will put yourself in an amazing position.
Absolutely. I'll give you a couple. The idea of climate and in particular flights, you know, if you are in the airline industry, what you are seeing now towards the end of 2022, oh, wow, demand is recovering. Flights are full. This is great for our bottom line, even with oil prices high, et cetera, et cetera. But what about the planet? 5, 10 years ago, people in my industry thought nothing of crossing oceans for a 2-hour meeting. And now I've shown up at a client in Scandinavia and they said, oh, did you come here just for us? And I had to have an answer ready to go and say, no, I have 3, 4 different stops in Europe. I'm making the most of this trip. It's not just for you. And maybe even that isn't going to be acceptable in a while, in a little while. But thinking about this concept of flight shaming, what might that actually be like in the future? Is there a situation where the US doesn't have 50 states in 5, 10 years? I have no idea. I don't know better than you. But 5, 10 years ago, when I would ask people, what's the chances that air travel goes down by 95% in the spring of 2020? People would have said, oh no, that's never going to happen. And then it did. So the point is not so much to predict these shocks, but rather to try and prepare for a broad range of them.
Have your conversations changed with clients over the past few years?
Yes, in some ways, my job is a little bit easier because I no longer have to start by convincing people that surprises can happen. But then my clients are all still human beings, and so they're still reluctant to believe about the next one that might happen, whether it's a massive cyber attack or nuclear weapon being used somewhere in the world, or the things we've just discussed in terms of climate shock or countries breaking apart or whatever else. I'm not predicting any of these in any specificity, but I think pondering them and others, and thinking about what would happen if this regulatory change came about? What would happen if our biggest competitor bought our second biggest competitor? What would happen if a disgruntled employee released 1 billion internal things to WikiLeaks? To be prepared for these sorts of things is an advantage.
Let me in onto your secret then. What does it look like when you go into a company? What is this scenario planning like? I mean, who are you speaking to? What are you saying? How are they responding to you? What games are you playing? I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but you know, what examples are you giving?
Not at all. Games are wonderful. We all love it. We're all a kid at heart. Starting with, as best we can, an understanding of the relevant issues and trends. I mean, laying out some of the core uncertainties that we're facing. And for a typical company, maybe these are, okay, geopolitical, technological, fiscal, consumer demand, climate. Okay, so 5, 6, 7 different uncertainties. And then it can be quite fun to think about how might each of those things evolve? How might each of those things land in the next few years? And allowing ourselves to be really expansive and just put some options out there. This is the sort of thing
that
I can...
You get some amazing responses, some really crazy ideas.
It's fantastically fun. And in fact, I can give you an example that I sometimes use as a thought exercise with clients. If you're trying to think about different scenarios for the future, imagine instead you were asked to come up with the next James Bond book or the next James Bond movie. You might think about, let's start with the gadget that James is going to use to get out of it. Okay, let's be super creative and think of a bunch of cool gadgets he's going to use that get introduced at the beginning and he uses them at the end. Okay, number two, let's think about the exotic locale. I don't know, it's been in the Caribbean, in Japan, in the Alps, I don't know what. Okay, fantastic. Now, let's think about the villain. Let's come up with a really creative thing for the villain. What's she or he going to be like? And so on. And fourth, let's think about James's love interest, whoever she or he or however you want to think about that. So imagine that we're super creative in coming up with a bunch of options for each of those things. Well, then if you take one from each of those, suddenly you have the skeleton of a plot. I mean, there's a lot of details you'd have to add in, but you could look at a bunch of different permutations of those things. And so similarly, if we have done something like that by thinking expansively about what might happen in geopolitics, in technology, in climate, in consumer demand, in whatever else, and then pick different options from there and combine them into permutations, suddenly we have this picture of 2030 where, yes, there's still more meat to add to the bone of that skeleton, but there's a lot of different scenarios that we can concoct that are suddenly more multidimensional in this. And then, of course, the real value comes from thinking, well, how could we become better prepared for these? What would you do if these things were going to happen? And of course, we can never be comprehensive and map out all possible scenarios, but the idea is to be representative of a range of possible futures that we might have to operate in, and then think, well, how might we become better prepared for each? Are there some no-regret moves that make sense across all? Are there some contingent moves we should plan for but not pull the trigger on? And then are there some bets we want to make to nudge the world in a direction that's better for us, or better for the world, or better for humanity, however we want to think about it. Mm-hmm. But can we nudge the world in a preferred direction because this scenario would be better than that one if it came to pass?
Alan, thank you so much. And to you for listening. We'd love to know your thoughts. To get in contact, leave us a message at thesowhat@bcg.com. And if you like this podcast, why not hit subscribe and leave a rating wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.